Welcome to Branch Out, a connection builders podcast, helping middle market professionals connect, grow, and excel in their careers. Through a series of conversations with leading professionals, we share stories and insights to take your career to the next level. A successful career begins with meaningful connections.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Branch Out podcast. I'm your host, Alex Drost. I'm excited for today as we have two special guests to help us continue exploring what business development really means and how to excel at it. Polly Mack, Director of Business Development for Griffin Investors, and Heather Madlin, Partner and Head of Business Development with Huron Capital. We unpack what success in a business development role looks like and the common challenges that we all face. Heather and Polly also share their thoughts on what skills are most important to develop and the mindsets necessary for success. I hope you all enjoy.
Connect and grow your network. We are on LinkedIn. Search for Connection Builders.
Polly, Heather, welcome to the Branch Out Podcast. I'm looking forward to this conversation today. Now, talking to our listeners for a minute, we're here to talk about business development. And I couldn't think of anyone better than two women that have done really well in private equity business development. And I'm excited to just really dig in here. And maybe let's start the conversation out and say, Heather, why don't you just share, what are your thoughts on business development? What does it mean to you? If I'm coming up to you and saying, you know, you're successful, you're a partner in a private equity firm in business development, what do you do? What does that mean? Help me understand.
Well, I think most people, hi, Alex, thanks for having me. I think most people think about business development as very externally facing, and that is a really important part of the job, and that's part of building your own brand and your firm's brand and all of that. But I also look at it as very internally focused as well. I mean, you are trying to be a credible person of influence, both to your market and to your firm. And in order to do that, you have to go beyond just the branding and awareness piece to become a thought leader in your industry, whether that be M&A, whether that be consumer products or whatever company or industry you're in and selling, you have to be a thought leader and it has to be credible because, you know, you want the person that you're prospecting or the referral source you're talking to really believe that you have influence at your firm. You know what your firm wants and doesn't want. And then your firm, also the people in your firm, you have to have credibility with so that they believe you're not wasting their time on opportunities, deals, whatever you're selling, that you're not wasting their time. And so you have to build that credibility and thought leadership by understanding your market, by sharing information. I mean, it goes well beyond the external part.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more there. I like the understanding that it's both internally and externally focused. And the thought leadership component, I think, is really important there. And Polly, I would love to just get your thoughts on thought leadership. And how do you, you know, as you're trying to establish yourself an expert and really in business development and put yourself out there and generate the deal flow that you need for your firm, how do you present yourself as an industry expert or as a thought leader and continue to build your personal brand around that?
Thanks for having me. It's a great question. I mean, I think it's constantly evolving. And in our roles, you really are kind of a cog within the overall wheel of the organization to help keep it moving, which, you know, I don't think everyone always appreciates, depending on the firm. But as Heather said, there are these internal and external dialogues and interactions that are really crucial to the role. And your main focus here is building that credibility and awareness in the market. And how you become a thought leader is really constantly looking how to learn and evolve yourself, right? The tactics that might have worked last year don't really work in a pandemic. So you're testing things out of how to interact with your key market or constituents, constantly trying new ways to engage them. And I think the people that are really successful at that are willing to put themselves out there and frankly, sometimes fail at doing it and learn from that. And that tends to be how they get better.
That's funny, Polly. I have this thing in my office that says, what have you failed at today? You know, what have you tried that worked? What have you tried that didn't work? Because that's how you end up learning, right? Alex, I might just add one more comment to Polly, because I think what we're talking about is not just business development as a role, right? Just external and transactional, but we're talking about it as a career. You know, we're curating our networks, we're curating and prospecting new opportunities and referral sources, and we're being thoughtful about the ways we're going about doing that, because that network will follow you for the rest of your career, whether you're at the job you're at today or the job that you want in the future. And fortunately for us, LinkedIn does that really easily, right? I mean, your network follows you everywhere you go, and you're marketing it. You're leveraging your network to sell yourself, not just your firm, when you're ready for that next job or that next promotion.
As someone who just recently did move firms, I can say that's actually extremely helpful. And the amount of people that did reach out because of the brand or reputation that I had built myself, not to toot my own horn here, but clearly there was enough of an impact, not only that my new employer obviously found that compelling, but people really did reach out and engage with me. And it has started a host of new dialogues that are really important. And effectively, that's what I've been hired to do. And so it does continue with you. And it's something that people really do need to think about all the time. This is not limited to where you are today.
Yeah, they hired you because of your network and because of your ability to build relationships and leverage that network for the good of the organization that you're representing. And that's extremely valuable.
I want to come back to the network side of this in a minute. I do want to hit a point that Heather, you made, and Paula, you hit on, this idea of learning. And if I want to, one, be a thought leader, two, I want to be good in the BD role, build these relationships. Part of that is learning, evolving, and constantly finding opportunities for growth. And Heather, your point of what have I failed at? How have I failed? Because ultimately, if you're succeeding at literally everything you do, then you're clearly not pushing yourself outside of some boundary, some comfort zone that really does allow that opportunity for growth and change. So I would love to ask you first, Heather, and Paula, I'd love your reactions as well on this. What are some of the challenges, right? You know, you have to fail, you have to go and hit some challenges and overcome obstacles to be good at business development. What are the challenges that you've hit in your BD career so far?
We've been in this for a long time, and I think we constantly talk about BD being a long game, right? If it's a career versus a job. And so Polly said it very well, you have to continually evolve and change. And so one of the things I've learned is acknowledging that what got you here won't get you there. And that's been a challenge, right? It's figuring out, what am I good at? You know, what is my highest and best use? And yeah, tactics and things that worked for me early on in my career to sort of get me into it worked then. But as you're moving up in your career and taking on bigger leadership roles within your own firm and becoming a thought leader, both externally, internally, like those tactics no longer work anymore. And, you know, I hired a presence coach 3 or 4 years ago now, because I saw that shift happening in my career and knew that the skill set I've had and I've grown historically is great, and I'll always have that. But I needed to evolve, and I needed to change the way that I communicated internally, which isn't necessarily the same way that you would communicate externally. And so I had to go through a lot of personal growth and work to better understand that about myself and how little changes here or there could be really helpful in propelling me in my own career.
I think that's a great point. Polly, what about you?
I think to follow on that, there's a few things. I think some of the challenges are the lack of clear-cut KPIs. So what you're doing and how you measure success, measuring it itself can be difficult. For business development and private equity, I don't consider success just receiving more teasers. That's not me doing my job well, because there's no conversation then around quality. There's no conversation around what got us an edge. And realistically, it's not just me. Going back to a previous question here, we aren't the only ones doing BD, and we're not always the leader. As a cog in this machine, I might be actually pushing other people to be more forward-facing in the organization than they may want or feel comfortable doing. And so then how do you measure how you're being successful can certainly be difficult. You really need alignment between business development and the entire organization. Heather said this early on, right? If we are going to be one of the first people in many cases that management teams or investment bankers may engage with, as a representative of that organization, they need to trust that we know what we're talking about. So you need good alignment. You need to be empowered. You need to have constant communication of what the firm is interested in. At Griffin, my firm, we're constantly evolving the sectors in which we spend time, and we're really a thesis-driven firm. So I need to know how those are changing to properly articulate it to the market so that we can be effective. And so that constant dialogue is really key in order to be successful.
That is so true, Polly. And, you know, I'll add to that in saying one of the challenges even deeper than kind of measuring it is all the tools and the innovation and the technology around data analytics and BI that now we have at our disposal to extract that data. And I think the challenge is obviously staying ahead and in front of that technology. But the other one is just extracting the right data and cutting and slicing and dicing it the way that makes sense for your business to extract what it does it mean for how successful or effective am I being in my job or is my team being in finding the right opportunities that are actionable and winnable. And so I think that's been one of the true joys actually of my career at Huron has just been figuring that out and what is the data telling you about where you should spend your time. And I think that's been tremendously helpful, but it requires you to stay on top of all of that.
Yeah. And time management is a huge challenge to the role as well, right? Like I think there's a reality in business development that like you have to accept you're not in an 8-to-5 job. And there's your personal life and your professional life are often, I will at least speak for myself, extremely blurred.
Especially in a pandemic when you're working from home. One of the challenges I faced was just underappreciating or undervaluing how critical marketing is to business development and how much, you know, they're so closely intertwined. And having to look at myself as a creative person, which, you know, I've been analytical and financial my whole career, and all of a sudden, like, what? I have to be a marketing person too? And so while we can all leverage the resources we have internally and, of course, hiring the right resources externally to help us out, it's also learning and evolving to learn a skill set that maybe you didn't think you really needed, but now you do. And so that's been also exciting and challenging at the same time.
Time management really is crucial to this job, and it certainly is a challenge. And the fact that you can end up in these rabbit holes, right? It, because there is no real distinction between your personal life and your professional life. In fact, I have made some incredible friends in this role, some of whom are I'm extremely close to, which makes the job really fun because I get to work with my friends. But you spend a lot of time sort of in this fine line between work and personal life. And the use of data, as Heather said, is really important to figure out where that time is most effectively spent. Because realistically, you have to try a bunch of things and figure out what's also a waste. And the people who do this well are constantly thinking through that and evolving it. And I'm not saying I'm the best at that, for sure. But it is something I'm constantly working on and trying to think about myself.
I want to really dig into that for a minute, just around the data side and using that from a time management and keeping yourself focused on success. And this is, I'm going to go on my own soapbox here for a minute around this. I look at when I say in networking and relationship building and business development, one of the biggest challenges that I hear a lot of people struggling with is staying focused, staying motivated, keeping the consistency up. And we know that the real key to that relationship building is that consistent touch, that consistently building out those relationships. And so often I think it becomes difficult to stay motivated and focused because there is a very small correlation between your direct efforts today and the actual results they produce tomorrow. Everything in this game is a long-term game. It's plant a seed and wait for years till something could end up coming there. And now that doesn't mean there's not value in tracking deal flow and referrals and relationships and all these things that can help you become smarter about what you're doing and assess and allocate your time and reflect on what's being successful, what's not, so that you can have the highest and best use of your time and just become smarter about that. But all that said, what I see so many times where people want to track how much revenue they're generating or how many deals they're closing based on their networking. And it's just, you will go crazy trying to keep yourself focused on it when you're like, oh, I did all this work and I had all this success, but nothing came out of it. Well, because that's how BD works, until one day you get a phone call from someone you talked to 2 years ago that you barely remember their name. And they're like, hey, by the way, I have a deal for you, right? That's how this game works. It's very unpredictable. It's very random. It doesn't mean you can't use the data. It doesn't mean it doesn't, again, help you prioritize and drive your efforts in the right place. but don't get yourself hooked up on only measuring something that, frankly, you have no influence over, right? Measure the stuff that, if you really want to measure your BD success, measure the stuff you have influence over. How many meetings did I have? How many interests did I make? How many, you know, what are the things that I did? Not necessarily what are the impacts? What is the reaction of that? Those are good to measure too, because it can give you an understanding of the magnitude of your efforts and what's working. But again, make sure you're measuring the right things to stay focused. And the reason I wanted to kind of go into that is Polly, your point around time management. I talk to people all the time about networking. And for the two of you, your job is to BD, network, and build relationships, right? Fundamentally, that's your role. It's also, and we talked about this a little bit before we hit record today, that's the role of more than just the two of you in your firms, but frankly, it should be the role of all professionals in the firm, right? There's always some level of interaction and relationship building in the marketplace that can be happening. But the reaction I always hear from people is, I don't have time for it. I just don't have time. So talking for a minute to just put yourself in the mindset, if we're talking to someone who does not do BD as a full-time job, but does have some level of BD responsibility or some level of they're a professional that wants to excel in their career. So BD is part of it. What do you say to someone who just says they don't have any time, Heather?
Yeah. I mean, look, you have to say you cannot be all things to all people. Like, you just can't be. And I guess in our industry, we say a little bit of boil the ocean, right? I mean, you have to be so shameless and unapologetic about how you spend your time. And you use the data to figure out if how you're spending the time, to Polly's point, is effective or not. But you really have to put boundaries around those activities that are meaningful and driving short-term value, but balancing that, Alex, based on what you said, that are also driving long-term value. Like, I know building this relationship today may not get me a deal or any business in 6 months, but in 2 years, this relationship is going to be really important to me. And so it's balancing those two things, but it's really setting boundaries around, you can't be everywhere. You can't be all things to all people, and really focusing in on your highest and best use and prioritizing your activities accordingly.
You also can't get frustrated in the beginning that you're not seeing results, because this really is a career where the results snowball. I've been doing this for a few years now, and the first 6 months, first 2 years, frankly, are very different conversations that I was having versus where I am today. And, you know, I benefited from going to a firm that had a well-established business development function. So I was very lucky as a place to start anyway. I mean, in many ways, a lot of the network was sort of handed to me, but I still had to foster it on my own and build my own brand, right? I couldn't just ride on the laurels of the firm itself. And that really takes time. And so I think some people, as you said, they don't have time for it, or they expect those quick results. And you need to understand that even what you're getting a few years in is going to be different than 10 years in. And this really is a long game. I think furthermore, people need to understand that, as I said, even though your title isn't BD, everyone impacts the overall business development of an organization. If you're an accountant at a firm, you're an assistant, if you're complaining to your friends that you're not happy at that job, that travels and hits the market. So obviously, as the management of our organization, you need to treat your employees well, right? It's good that everyone should be ideally happy, because we project that energy to the market and make people want to work with us. And private equity in particular is a relationship business, right? You can go buy stock and no one really can tell you whether or not you get to buy it. But when you're buying a company, like, the management team actually gets to choose.
And so, yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
All have to be that face of the firm.
That's right. And, you know, it's funny, Alex, I'm actually doing a business development training and onboarding for our associates and some of the new hires we've made recently. And we do a whole deck around, what is business development? What do we do every day? How do we do it? And how can you contribute to what we do in business development? And a lot of it is, these guys sit at their computer all day looking at spreadsheets. How are they possibly able to contribute to BD? Well, they're the ones negotiating NDAs. They're the ones sometimes turning down deals, asking questions about deals early on in the process, talking to bankers. And every opportunity, whether you're on the phone or you're in person, there's an opportunity to be marketing and developing future business and building relationships with those at your level, the younger associates, building relationships, because in 10 or 20 years, they're all going to be the leaders of the firms and the ones that you're looking to. So, And those are going to be the people in your network.
It's so funny. I hate that this is going to probably come out wrong, but like the moment I realized I was old was that.
How many instances this happens every day now?
The moment I realized I was like old was that all the like key deal people at banks were like friends of mine. Mm. It was no longer like someone else's dad.
Yes, you know? Because oh, the relationship
right.
Oh,
I
grew.
Get it. Yeah. Yeah. We went to college together. Yes, I know you. And so you think back in the day, like I was like, oh, I don't know these people that well. Or like I remember I wasn't actually in private equity the whole time. It was certainly not in-house. So I maybe didn't always value that as much. And it's really funny to me now because I'm like, I know these people so well. And these are relationships I've actually had in some cases for 15 plus years. Long game indeed.
This is Branch Out, a Connection Builders podcast.
But all this comes back to the long game, right? One of the things that I fundamentally believe is success in relationship building in general is a mindset thing. And it's about really having that long-term mindset. And what I heard both of you say loud and clear was that you have to make sure you're thinking about how every action you do impacts the relationship of the human on the other side of the table. If I'm signing an NDA, I'm the associate signing the NDA, and Heather, you worked really hard to build a good relationship with someone. I'm just, for lack of a better way of saying it, an asshole in this NDA negotiating process. And let me tell you, as a former investment banker, I've sat on the other side of some private equity firms that just, I think there was just a game to see what we could do on the NDA.
That was an initial impression. That's your first impression of that firm as a potential buyer, Alex. You're right.
And this is speaking to the deal professionals on the sell side here, as someone who actually I was speaking to the buy side as someone who worked in the sell side, as someone who, exactly as you just said, Heather, my first impression of a buyer is that, and I won't say the names of the firms, but to this day, and I have been out of banking for 18 plus months at this point, I can tell you their exact name and their firm. There's three of them. We showed them most deals we worked on, but oh my gosh, I rolled my eyes every single time because I was like, oh, here it is again. Let's get this one fired up. And you know, there's to a point where one of the firms, we had like a special NDA set aside. We're like, we're going back to this because I can't keep renegotiating this.
Oh, God.
And what I want people yeah. to recognize is if I'm the advisor, I'm sitting in the sell side banker seat, and I'm ultimately advising my client where to go in this transaction, and I have influence over my client. Your behavior, your actions like that, and I get you have to protect yourself. You have to have certain things in your NDA, but you do not have to go about it in an aggressive way. You don't have to be rude about it. There's so many ways to do this friendly. And that perception I get just makes me say, you know, you bid close to someone else. We're going to go with buyer two because buyer one, they have been a headache to work with. Or, you know, maybe I forgot to respond to your email. Oops. Right. I mean,
yeah. Well, how many of us are there? There's yes. so many. Middle market, so many private equity.
Don't need to sell to us. You can sell to 1,000 different firms. So we have a page in that training that I mentioned on how to turn down a deal. Like literally, there is an art to doing that. And Polly understands this from the place and person she formerly worked for. But it is not just saying, sorry, we're not interested after you've taken a book and gone through that NDA process, but it's being very thoughtful about why. And then using that opportunity to also tell them, well, we've been really busy this year. We've closed X deals. We're looking at XYZ. If you've got anything, registering interest in other sectors and opportunities that may be right for you. So it all comes back to that.
And some of it's just common courtesy, right? Like people get really doing day to day. And I totally understand that. But if you're not responsive, if you're not just, if someone emails you and asks you a quick question, you know, or you realize you're not going to look at that deal any further and you don't write back and explain that you are going to pass and give them a real thoughtful response as to why, considering you've had them sit on the phone with you for an hour of their very valuable time, like you're probably not going to get called again because there's a lot of other private equity firms out there. Our money is all green. So
no is better than a long drawn out one.
Yeah. And you know, these things come back to haunt you, right? As you said, there's people who don't get looks at further deals. And the people who really are thoughtful and are good players and recognize that relationships and reputation matters. Look, most of the deals we look at are ultimately going to be banked, but in some cases that can help get you an early look. I mean, a great example in the Griffin portfolio is Mechanics Wear. So the former CFO of one of our previous portfolio companies, Doug Hood, was really good friends with the family that had founded the company Mechanicswear, and they make effectively premium work gloves that has like a cult enthusiast following within the PPE category. And based on Doug's own experience in working with us, he knew that they were contemplating a transaction, and he made an early introduction to Griffin. Now, as a CFO, I mean, at a former company, he had obviously had a fair amount of exposure to our firm. So he knew a lot of the people here. He knew exactly how we operated and how we treated our partners. And we, the companies that we invest in, again, are of a size that it is rare for them to not go through a banker in a process. So we know that. But getting those early introductions were really key for us in that process and gave us a drastic edge over everyone else. And how did we get that? From being good partners, right? Really simple.
I think this does come back to mindset. It comes back to valuing people on the other side. And if you ever find yourself having a mindset of, well, that's just not important, I don't need to respond, or I don't care, this, you know, it's not a success because we're passing on the deal, so what does it matter if I give them a better reason? If you start those types of thoughts, right, it's that negative mindset, that view that, well, it only matters if we're succeeding, if we're getting a deal done, or if there's something to be had right now, versus thinking about that long game, that long-term relationship, and understanding that relationships everywhere can lead to something. And the better you can do, the more goodwill you can put out there, the better job you can do at establishing and building those relationships. And every situation you find yourself in professionally, the better it is. And again, I go back to my role in being a professional and saying, if I'm out there, and again, whether I'm talking to a private equity buyer, I'm talking to a client, I'm talking to an accountant doing a quality of earnings, I'm talking to the lawyers writing the documents, it doesn't matter who in that ecosystem. All of those are opportunities to build relationships and to make a good impression that can come back in the future. And Heather, to your point earlier about the associates and especially the deal team side, and we'll speak more broadly, this is frankly for any professional out there that is interacting in the professional ecosystem, whether that be with other advisors, with clients, just because you're not in that client lead generation or that BD type role, you are still 100% in a relationship building function, and you are turning down great opportunities to build good working relationships in future opportunity if you do not focus on making sure those relationships are a priority. It's a mindset. You have to believe that. You have to put the time and energy, and you have to make sure that you're always asking yourself, how would this be perceived? Am I being an asshole? Am I being rude? Am I being unreasonable? And I get, like, things happen and people bump heads in the deal world, and it definitely happens, but you have to do your best to work your way through that and keep those relationships alive.
If you don't, I mean, you're probably in the wrong industry, certainly for private equity. Although, and maybe within finance, like, there's certainly some roles where you don't have to worry about interacting with anyone else and you can be as much of a jerk as you want. But even in other industries, I don't know why I was thinking about this, like Walmart has greeters. You know, like, they have people when you walk in who say hello, and they themselves are like the face of the company as you walk in.
First impressions make a difference.
It makes a huge difference, right? Those are just little things that, you know, ultimately people remember. So it is in retail, it's in private equity, it's everywhere.
Relationships are everything. Relationships are, and especially in today's world, we are more interconnected, hyperconnected than we ever have been. I always say this, especially our client base and our listener base being a middle market service provider. You are a commodity at the very core of what you do in every way. You're, in private equity's case, you bring dollars, and, you know, your dollars are green. Polly, your dollars are green. Heather, your dollars are green. I bet I can spend them the exact same way. And if you're a lawyer, ultimately, if I hire you to get my legal work done, I hope you get it right and you both do it the same way. If I hire two accountants to do my taxes, I sure hope you get the same answer. If not, I want to know who got the lower answer for me. But ultimately, the idea is you really are a underlying commodity provider. And the only way you can have that competitive distinct edge is the relationship and the different knowledge and insight and ways that you can add value, because you're good at building those relationships and communicating that. That really leads me into a topic Heather, I want to get your thoughts on to start with. We talked before we jumped on recording here around the skill sets that ultimately are needed in being successful in this role. And I know, as you mentioned here, you're working with training up some of the associates in your firm on this. Talking to someone who doesn't do a full-time BD role today, but says in the future, I want to do BD, what's important? And not just private equity BD, and obviously that's a core area of your expertise, but in general, what does it take to be successful at BD?
Yeah, I mean, I'll hit this in two areas. One for that person who's maybe not in it in a full-time role, Alex, but we hit on this a little bit before, but being a lifelong learner, faking it till you make it can only last for so long until you just got to admit you don't know. And then you got to go and learn what you need to learn in order so the next time that question comes up or the topic comes up that you are more credible in talking about it. So it's admitting what you don't know. And, you know, seeking to be that lifelong learner and being open and vulnerable to admitting that and then fixing it and learning. It's also knowing that your brand and reputation will follow you throughout your career. Unfortunately, we know what happens online stays online. We also know that the same is true of your behavior on the road or at a conference or in a public setting. People remember those things, and that will follow you through your career. Good, bad, and indifferent. And you kind of want it to be the good part. And so that's remaining true to who you are and being authentic and not trying to be someone you're not, because that will only take you so far in your career. And I think the other part, Alex, of it is the skill sets required for BD transcend beyond being a great communicator and building and leveraging relationships. It's having that technical and analytical mindset to make sure you're measuring your success effectively, and then also being a strategic and big picture thinker, figuring out in the grand scheme of my activities, what is my end goal for my firm, for myself, and making sure that, you know, the activities that you're doing and the people and the conversations that you're having are moving you toward that end goal as well for both your firm and for yourself. And I felt like my career in business development really started shifting when I put on that visionary mindset of being strategic for my firm and putting words and data to our strategy around business development and marketing as a firm over the longer term. And that's a game changer for a lot of firms when you can have that mindset.
Polly, so Heather shared the lifelong learning, your reputation follows you, and the value of big picture thinking. I want to come back to a couple of those. I think those are all spot on. What's your reaction to that? Maybe where else do you have some other thoughts that you would say to someone trying to break into a BD career?
Well, she's spot on reputation, Alex. You said so yourself that you remember people who were difficult to negotiate NDAs with, and how you behave in a process for PE, people remember that, and it's going to impact future deal flow. I think another skill set that's really core is being really recognizing that you're an influencer within the organization, not just an influencer to the market, but you need to actually influence people internally, often to do things that they might not initially feel is their core skill set. It may not be comfortable. This is getting people to pick up the phone and talk to bankers. This is getting other people in the organization to be on panels who maybe don't like to be in front
or mentioned in news articles,
yeah.
You know,
so we are really steering kind of the overall outbound communication, but a lot of that just doesn't happen overnight, right? You have to get everyone else aligned. And there's a lot of soft skills that I think I even discounted myself as being so crucial to PE when I was right out of college. I didn't realize there was such an important role for that, but I've come to see it really is fundamental, right, to the long-term success of an organization, that you need to have people who are constantly thinking about what is our reputation, how are we being perceived in the market, thinking about keeping that deal flow going. But in order to do it, it's not just that person, it's everyone else. And so we have to keep everybody moving and keep them all aligned.
So let's talk soft skills for a minute. We hear this all the time. Everyone always says soft skills are important, right? I've never met anyone who says soft skills aren't important. I've certainly met people who don't prioritize the development of soft skills. When we say soft skills, what are some things that jump to mind? And Polly, I'll go to you first in this one. What are just maybe some certain or some areas of soft skills where, like, this is really important to my success as a professional?
I think empathy is really important. You need to be able to, and a lack of ego.
Okay. going to say humble. Yep. Get it.
You need to be as comfortable talking to the CEO as you do the mailman within a company. And you have to treat everyone with respect, right? So this is about how you, your composure in these organizations, and ultimately getting people to trust you and want to work with you, right? And that comes through, you don't force it. You don't say you have to go get on this panel or you have to write this article, right? But it's understanding they do have other priorities, and how do you also get them to feel aligned that this too is a noteworthy priority, and that comes from them really feeling like you hear them and you know what they're doing, right? So it's kind of circular, admittedly, and you can't go with like right in with an ask to people, but you really have to also couch things and frame it as to how this is good for them long term. None of this should ever feel like I'm trying to push someone in one direction, or as we've said, it shouldn't feel like I'm selling. We need everyone to mutually feel like they're aligned and winning, or at best that the other party thinks that they're getting the biggest benefit out of this and less so than me. Like, that's winning. And how you frame things, like, that's a skill of learning how to do that.
And it's the empathy skill, right? If I want to go and I want to say, Heather, I really think you need to work on X, Y, and Z. If I come at it and say, well, Heather, you're bad at X, Y, and Z, and you need to get better at it, versus, hey, Heather, I know you're doing really great at this and you've done well here. Have you considered working on X, Y, and Z? Because I think it would really help you in these ways. It's a different way of approaching it. You have to have that mindset of, okay, and this is something I tell myself every day, and people are doing their best. I genuinely believe that. I think people get up every single day and they're doing their best. And that doesn't mean there aren't assholes in the world. That doesn't mean that there aren't bad people in the world at times. But the honest reality is, when people aren't performing at their peak, it's not because in their mind they're saying, well, I don't want to, or I'm not going to do this. It's usually because they're thinking differently about it, or they have a different mindset, or there's some other challenge that they're dealing with. And if you really step back and just say, okay, let me put myself in their shoes and think about, if I was them, how would I want to be treated? And this goes both from providing feedback, helping people grow, but also general communication. When you're positioning and talking to a potential seller about the value that your fund brings to this investment, well, you need to think about how they feel. You need to think about what they're thinking in their shoes, and how what you're saying is affecting them. And this all comes back to, you've got to let go of that ego so that you're not thinking about me, I. You're thinking about them, the other person, and that empathetic mindset that really does allow for that deeper connection and to resonate with how you communicate with them.
Alex, I couldn't agree more. We spend so much time up front prior to a management meeting with business owners and management teams, learning about them, not just professionally, but personally. What can we find out about them? Where are they from? What college did they go to? What commonalities do we have? And not faking who you are, but like finding those genuine connection, making those genuine connections and finding those common themes that resonates and builds that rapport and trust. And that takes a certain skill. That is definitely a soft skill. And look, people are good at it and some people aren't, and that is okay. But I do think it's something you can learn. You know, the presence coach I hired, one of the things we focused on was energy management. And the way that, you know, we interface with folks externally could be, we're so energetic, we're so outgoing, we have to just come, and people will say that, well, wow, you have so much energy. How is that possible? It's like 8 o'clock at night and you've been up since six. But when you're talking to a business owner in a management meeting setting, or you're talking in a boardroom to your partners about how you want to influence the strategy of business development going forward that may impact the overall firm strategy, those are way different. You've got to manage that energy and you've got to change that communication style to meet the audience and to succeed in the point that you're trying to make or get across. And it may not always resonate with them, and that is okay. You also have to learn when to take a step back and say, that's okay. I'm going to go with the organization's decision on this and get on board and be a team player, even if that maybe isn't an idea that resonated with them. So those are all very soft skills, but those are the ones that will propel you up in your career, which are critical.
Yeah, I think knowing really like who you're talking to effectively and finding a way to communicate in their language, right, is key. Right. So it might be there's certain people who love big ideas and they love that energy. And then there's a lot of people, certainly within private equity firms, a lot of your deal professionals are going to be more like they want numbers and really kind of core facts and data. Right. So there's just different people that you're going to have a different type of conversation with. And I think the people that are strongest at business development know how to flex in terms of which way or which communication style they're using, depending on that audience.
This is Branch Out, bringing you candid conversations with leading middle market professionals.
It's dynamic communication, ultimately. And one of the things that I really believe all the time when I hear an argument or a disagreement or someone who has some kind of a breakdown in communication, when someone says, well, that's not what I said, that's not what I meant. And when you start, and I get that, and yes, that miscommunication happened, but what if you're finding yourself saying that, you have to step back and say, okay, it doesn't really matter what I said. It really matters what you heard. Because fundamentally, if I'm communicating with you, Polly, and I need to tell you something, it doesn't really matter the words that come out of my mouth. It matters the thoughts that go into your head. Simple as that. Because they're just air coming out of my mouth saying stuff, and it really means nothing other than what thoughts and actions you ultimately take on it. So in that comes down to where that you have to be very careful on that communication, you have to be thoughtful on that communication, and you have to look for ways and be very cognizant of how you're communicating and how someone might be reacting to it. And that is that dynamic personality, that ability to be able to read the room. And that's a skill set. Heather, you said earlier, some people are better, some people aren't. And I 100% agree. There's different personality types that have strengths in that area of reading a room and being better in a social situation. Everyone can get better. Everyone. No matter if you're strength in it or not, everyone can get better. It does come down to practicing. You have to spend time and energy. And the biggest thing, and this goes to my next question here, Heather, I want to go to you. This, we've talked about lifelong learning a bunch, and we just talked about soft skills, this importance of having empathy, getting rid of your ego, having good communication, because again, it's not what I say, it's what the other person hears that really matters at the end. I have to continually invest in myself and make sure I'm growing and learning. How do I do that? How do I make sure that I'm always open-minded and being a lifelong learner?
Wow, that's being open to critical feedback.
Vulnerability.
That's understanding, wow, I can really improve upon that. That's a weakness, acknowledging what you're not good at and finding ways to change that, finding a mentor, getting a coach, finding those people that are good at it and asking them how they did it, and really be vulnerable and being open to hearing that feedback, you know, not being defensive about it. I think that's a natural reaction of people, is just to defend. And even to your point, Alex, you don't think it's a weakness. If someone else does, it is. And you've got to acknowledge that and work on it. And reviews in finance and M&A, where we spend our time, they're so focused on skills, the hard skills. And sometimes it just doesn't get under that layer. And so, you know, whether you hire a coach to do this or you do it yourself, you know, this presence coach called 6 people in my life, 4 internally and 2 externally from boards that I serve on, asking the question of not is she good at her job, but what could she do to be better at her job? And then she coached, you know, she pushed them on the soft parts. She accumulated all that feedback. And this is something you could just do yourself. You can go and be open to hearing it by asking. So when I'm done with a big project, or I've closed a deal, or I've done something internally, I will go to 3 or 4 people at my firm and say, how did I do? Give me some feedback. And don't wait until your annual review to get it. Be constantly searching for it and be willing to hear it.
Yeah, to follow on that, I think you'd be surprised that the counterparts that you have, being open even and saying, hey, I'm still learning. By the way, how did we do? You know, I do this often with a process, whether or not we won or lost, but go back to bankers and ask them, how did we do as a firm? Are there things you felt like we could have done better? Do you feel like we did what we said we were going to do? Right? That's really important in this industry. So we really make a point to find that out. Then I'll ask them about myself, because they're obviously talking to my peers at other firms and say, is there anything you really wish that I was doing more in terms of how I'm engaging with you? And I think Alex, your comment earlier that people are trying to do good. I think people have good intentions. If you're willing to put yourself out there vulnerably and say that, I think you can get some really good constructive feedback, and people don't hold it against you. You're not expected to know everything all the time. And the people that are willing to own that they don't know everything all the time and that they're focused on getting better, I think they tend to have a better overall reputation in the market because it shows that they're genuine and that they care.
And I can speak from my own experience in this, this idea of knowing everything and having to admit I don't know something. That's a challenge. I think we all struggle with it in our own ways. And it is, it's a level of vulnerability and being able to say, I don't know something. For me personally, something that has really shifted in my mind over the last handful of years is recognizing that success and growth and the future of my life isn't about hitting a certain destination or a point. It's not some light switch where, okay, once I cross this line, I'm there. I no longer need to grow. I know everything. I'm a master of stuff. That's not a place that I ever expect to meet. Rather, those mile markers along the way are just making sure that I'm staying on the right journey and I'm still continuing to move forward. But it's something that you just continue on. There is no end to that. And once you start in your mind thinking, well, I know all I need to know there. I'm there. I've mastered that skill, that's a problem. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't get to a point of mastery where you stop investing direct resources in improving that area because there may be other skill sets in your life that you can improve, but that it never means, to me at least, that you're ever capped out. You're ever at capacity. There's nothing more to learn. I know everything. And if you ever get in that mindset that, well, I already know that, or I already know what I need to know, and there's no improvement for me, it's a bad mindset to find yourself in.
Yeah. And Alex, I'll quote Brené Brown again, and I've done this on a couple different times, but you know, you could have courage or comfort, but you can't have both. And I'm constantly pushing. We as an organization are going through some strategic planning, and we're trying to put on paper define the culture of our firm. How do we want to be and how do we want to execute on it? And one of the, you know, guiding principles is like, get uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable and be willing to ask and answer the tough questions. Don't sail through because it's comfortable and you're not willing to address it. But really, as an organization, be willing to do that.
We're going to wind this episode down. We've covered a lot of great topics. Before I do a quick recap, I want to just say to our listeners, this last 10 minutes of the podcast here have been a really great conversation around growth. If you haven't had a chance yet, go back, listen to the first 4 episodes of our second season. They're all on professional growth and really overcoming those mindsets and putting yourself, exactly as Heather just said, into that discomfort zone, that leaning outside of where you feel good so you can really get into that growth zone. So again, make sure you find time to go back and listen to that. So I want to give a quick recap of what we talked about. We hit a lot today, so bear with me here. Number one, we talked about BD being an internally focused function as well as externally, recognizing that you have to build credibility and influence both in the organization and outside of the organization. And part of that is really being a thought leader in saying, okay, how can I learn? How can I evolve? And as we just talked about, this idea of being a lifelong learner and always looking for that opportunity to continue to grow as a thought leader, as an expert, as a person, in recognizing that as a BD professional, as a relationship builder, as any professional at all that works on building relationships, it's about building that influence and that knowledge and expertise that does come through consistently learning, consistently looking to grow. And it's a career. BD is a career. I would argue for those of you that are in a true BD role, absolutely, it's your career. I'd argue for any professional, BD is the core of what you do. We are all entrepreneurial in one way or another. And fundamentally, we have to seek to add value to others in the marketplace. And that's entrepreneurship, right? Looking for ideas, looking for problems to solve. So it is a career, and it's something that you really have to embrace if you want to be successful. And the reason you have to embrace it is because it's a long game. You have to look and recognize this isn't something you can do in 6 months of going out and BD and relationship building and networking and, oh, you're going to see all this great success. No, it can take a lifetime to really see the success. And it is compounding as time goes on, but you have to continue to again, grow, because what got you here will not get you there. And I think that's fundamentally true with anything in life, but especially in the relationship building soft skill side of things. Next, we talked about the measuring success. And if you want to measure your success using data, using KPIs, especially leaning into the technology that's available, can be a very helpful tool in analyzing what's working and being a reflective tool to help you measure and understand how to make the highest and best use of your time. But fundamentally, when you want to track the actual success you're having, you have to look at the right metrics and not be measuring this based on conversions, revenue generated, deals won, and things of the like, because it's just so hard to really have that correlation between your efforts today and the results tomorrow. And you'll lose motivation, you'll lose focus, you're going to feel like you're not making any traction if you're looking at the wrong metrics. So again, use the data, but use the data to make sure that you're becoming smarter in using your time wisely, not necessarily to directly measure the success that you're having. And then we talked about this, the need to have alignment of the team. So especially if you are in a true BD role and you're in a professional where your job is to go out there and build the reputation and the relationships of the firm, you need to have the firm support you. You need to make sure that other members of the team realize that. And part of that is because you're not the only one responsible for BD. It may fall on your shoulders to lead those efforts, but everybody in the firm has an obligation and a duty to build those relationships if you really want to be successful, if you really want to excel at the BD function. So it is taking the entire team to be aligned with that and supportive of that. And then Polly, you brought up the personal professional mix. And I thought this was so great. And understanding that at the end of the day, if you want to be successful in relationship building, it's time management. There is a limited number of hours in the day. And you as a professional, as a human, are the same human personally and at your work life. And all of that's going to mix together. There's so much to balance. There's so much going on there. And it can be really hard at times, period. There's no other way around it. It can be really, really hard. So just remember that it can be hard. But remember that if you show up as your authentic, genuine self, that's where you're going to perform the best. You're going to really enjoy it the best, but you have to really believe that. You can't go into a BD role or relationship building role and say, well, I'm going to do that for work, but in my personal life, I don't want anything to do with it. It's just, you're not going to be able to draw that line, especially in this world of COVID and interconnectivity that we live in today. I think that time is long gone. Heather, you brought up the point of you have to be a creative person. And I think so many people, especially as a professional and in professional services, you start in a highly technical and analytical role and then move your way into this relationship building role, this BD role. And there is a level of creativity that has to come when you have to sit back and think, okay, how can I get creative about positioning and branding and marketing and building relationships and helping people see what makes me and my firm unique and how I can bring value to the customer, the client, or the person on the other side of the table. And you simply have to get creative around that. And for those of you that think you're not creative, find time, find white space, creativity will come. Everyone has creativity. Some are better than others, but you have to find the space for it. Creativity does not pop itself up into your life unless you make time for it. And then we talked about all touch points mattering and realizing that touch points, the example that I used was as a banker signing an NDA with a private equity buyer, the way that relationship is handled has an impact far greater than just that one interaction. So recognize that the goal is to consistently have the mindset of building relationships. And now we shift the conversation into soft skills and learning and what it takes to be successful. And we dove into, again, open to learning, looking at how to constantly find that opportunity, recognizing that your reputation will follow you. So be careful, be thoughtful in how you act and how you behave, because it is far greater than, again, that one instance. It will follow you farther. And the best way to do that and to be successful at that is to remember that everyone is an influencer in a BD role in one way or another. And you have to be a big picture thinker. You have to be thinking about that end game. You have to really step back and realize this isn't just about the one interaction today. This is about the big game. This is about the long-term effect that this is going to have. If I want to be successful, my actions today are going to impact that in the future. And I have to be thinking about that future to be successful. And finally, tapping out on soft skills here, we went over empathy and lack of ego and really the need to communicate clearly and understanding that it's not about what you say, it's about how the other person interprets it and thinks about it and hears you. And to really be good at communicating and to building those relationships, you have to let your ego go and you have to look and find empathy so you can connect with the other person. And the last topic we hit on was feedback. And wow, that was a heck of a list. The last topic we hit on was feedback. And so my call to action for this week, and what I really want to ask all of our listeners to do in the next week, find an opportunity to go seek feedback, open-minded feedback, where you really just sit down and say, hey, how can I get better at this? Or what could I have done better in this situation? Or what went well? What didn't go well? Again, how can I improve this? And be open-minded. Don't defend it. If you find yourself saying, well, no, or this is why, or making an excuse, then you're totally negating the value of that. Just sit, listen, understand, and take that in and look for opportunities to improve on that. So Polly, Heather, I really appreciate you coming on here. Do you have any thoughts or anything I missed in that recap list to add in here?
That was great, Alex. I didn't realize we covered so much content.
It was a lot.
That was incredible.
Polly and I like to talk.
It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate both of you coming on here and contributing to the show. This was a great episode. A lot here for listeners. Go back, listen twice, listen three times here. And if you're listening on 2x speed, go listen to it on 1x. There's enough in there. You really need to digest that. So for our listeners, Polly, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. Feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, or you can email me directly, mac@griffininvestors.com. And I do think the only other thing I would add is, you know, being in our role, we're effectively also like ideas people. Like, you can have the best ideas and the best meetings and the best conversations. If you don't follow up, it's completely worthless. So like, if there is one skill at the end of the day, don't think about having 500 meetings. Just have 5 where you actually follow up. You will get so much further along, right? And it's something that I think people forget. It's like the most basic, easy
thing. It truly is. My mantra to young people is follow up and follow through. That's it.
Absolutely. What great advice to end on. Polly, really appreciate that. That is such a great point there. And Heather, so follow up, follow through. How can people follow up and reach out to you? What's a good way to get in touch?
Yeah, same as Polly. Found me on LinkedIn. Happy to connect. And my email is hmadland@huroncapital.com. It was awesome. Really fun, Alex. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you again.
Thank you both. This was so fun.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Share this podcast with your professional network to help others connect, grow, and excel. Like what you hear? Leave us a review. And don't forget to subscribe now.